Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
And welcome to the AEW Rampage Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, to look back on Friday night's episode of Rampage. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review AEW Rampage, but also AEW Dynamite, Raw, SmackDown, NXT 2.0 pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a really good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Sidgwick, author of the brilliant Becoming All Elite book, which is available right now, whatculture.bigcartel.com. Go and get it. You're going to get it in time for Christmas. You can even get it signed by the author himself. But as I said, joined by Sidge to look back on Rampage. And I really enjoyed this show.
I did. If I'm out of breath, it's because I've just climbed up one flight of stairs 5 minutes ago. Gee, I need to make some changes, like. I mean, it's Christmas coming up. It's the wrong time to do that. And, you know, New Year's resolutions are all bollocks, so I'm probably not going to make any changes. But, you know, if I could be arsed, I would. No, I really like this. I'm a stickler, Wilborn, for range. Use that word quite often on podcasts. And, in fact, in my new book, Becoming All Elite, The Rise of AEW, which you can pre-order right now at whatculture.bigcartel.com. It's not enough for me to simply watch X number of very good to great matches in a row on a wrestling show. Mm. I've been spoiled. We've all been spoiled for quite some time. So when I talk about why I love and I'm impressed by Dynamite more often than not, it's because you get the promos, the angles, and the match quality, and you get the stylistic range. It's an hour-long show. This was such a huge appeal to my taste that I'm going to put this one over to the hilt. I thought this was an excellent Rampage. And for three distinct reasons, all three matches just complemented each other beautifully, that I were raced by. The quality was high throughout. I got a little bit of something different out of every match. Love this. What a wonderful, what a wonderful hour of television this was.
Let's dive straight into it then. The opening match was Adam Cole and Bobby Fish versus Orange Cassidy and Wheeler Yuta. They do all their entrances, and the match starts with Cole and Cassidy. Cassidy goes to do his whole hands in the pocket spot, but Cole stops him so he can do another Adam Cole, baby. And that's basically the story of the opening bits of this match. Orange Cassidy consistently trying to put his hands in his pockets, and Adam Cole getting more and more pissed off with him doing this, and that led effectively, because he was so dead set on stopping this sunglass-wearing git putting his hands in his pockets, that he got out-wrestled by Orange Cassidy, who then did a little pose for the
cameras. Because it's a strategy. Mm. He's a very clever wrestler who's trying to win matches.
And that riled up Cole. Eventually, Wheeler Yuta comes in, gets caught on the middle rope. Cole pulls him to the mat, and then Cole and Fish take advantage. Fish hit a neck breaker as we go to a picture-in-picture break. They are experienced tag team together, and so they manage to isolate Wheeler Yuta. But finally, after we come back from the break, Yuta is fighting back, dumps Cole to the floor, and Suguri to Bobby Fish. Goes to tag Cassidy, but Cole pulls Orange Cassidy off the apron. So Yuta has to fight back and hit both of his opponents with elbows and a middle rope dropkick to allow himself to get to the corner, tagging Orange Cassidy, who comes in and pops his hands in his pockets. He does the little kicks, and there's a brilliant spot where Cole and Fish are sort of selling and then realize something like tickling like the back of my leg and turn around. And here he is, Orange Cassidy, doing his signature moves. But it's all a ruse, because as they go to chin him, he manages to knock them both down with a drop kick, and a Rana sends both of them out to the floor. He does a tope, suicida to the outside, and Yuta comes off the top with a crossbody onto the floor to take them both down. Yuta then frog splashes Cole, gets a near fall off that. Cassidy hits Stundog Millionaire. Yuta hits the German suplex. Cassidy jackknife covers again for a two count, but then Fish fights back, exploded suplex. Cole hits him with a knee strike, and Fish puts a knee bar on Cassidy, and there's a brilliant sort of cat and mouse spot with Yuta trying to break up the submission and Cole trying to cut him off. Eventually, Yuta did manage to break it up. Cassidy hits the beach break on Cole. Yuta hits the angle slam on Bobby Fish for a great near fall, but he goes up to the top. Cole crotches him, and Cole takes out Cassidy, hoying him into the ring steps on the outside, and Fish sets himself up and hits a brilliant top rope Falcon Arrow for the 1-2-3.
I thought this was excellent, and I thought it was excellent for a variety of reasons. The first of which is, like, pro wrestling uses its artistic license to do silly stuff on seasonal episodes to just ridiculous extents at times. Like, we see, oh, it's a trick-or-treat street fight on Halloween. Let's make someone look like a tit by putting their head in a pumpkin. Oh, Santa's on WWE TV all the time. Like, we see it all the time. What this match did, in just a little low-key way, was it realised, right, it's Friday, the Yanks have celebrated Thanksgiving, they're probably going to be extremely full of food and in decent moods. Now's not the time to do really serious main event angle business. It's not the right time of year to ask people to invest in some kind of really emotionally intense storyline. So what they instead do is, instead of doing a really broad, stupid, prop-based comedy match, they just do a match brimming with really inventive light relief. That wasn't necessarily a Thanksgiving match, quote-unquote, but it was just a mood-dependent bit of fun for the Yanks on TV. So I really liked the tone of this match, because it didn't really do anything silly, but it was very amusing and really creatively worked. Situationally, an exceptional match to do that you probably wouldn't see that much, particularly with Adam Cole involved. Cast your mind back about 3 or 4 weeks. AEW realizes that Adam Cole and John Silver have got chemistry on being the elite. And the chemistry is based on the fact that Adam Cole is seething and just cannot abide John Silver being a little knacker who just puts his foot in his mouth and just pesters him constantly. The bit works, right, because Adam Cole's got an absolutely fantastic face.
Oh, yeah.
Adam Cole selling the fact that he's had it up to goddamn here with this idiot is really good, on being the elite. They thought, that's kind of gold on being the elite. Let's do the exact same thing on Dynamite. Right, let's do the Budge thing. Very few people in the arena react, because being the elite has become kind of a niche concern.
Yeah.
There are way more Dynamite fans than there are being the elite fans. So this shtick doesn't really work in arenas. They recognize that it doesn't work in arenas. So what they do before the John Silver versus Adam Cole Rampage match is they decide to explain the joke, which always makes jokes much funnier, as you're well aware, and it fails as well. What this match does is it holds on to this concept, right? Adam Cole selling being furious at silliness is really funny. They're not letting go. This has to be done. And they do it in the best way possible by having Adam Cole seethe at Orange Cassidy's shtick. And it's exceptional. It's a joke that requires no explanation. It's a joke that's folded into a pro wrestling match wonderfully. And I cannot tell you how many times I smiled at Orange Cassidy and Adam Cole constantly having this little strategic dance where one of them pisses the other off and the other one sells being pissed off with this absolutely incredibly expressive face. This is a really fun match and really at the end, quite a dramatic match tacked onto the end of it, but they just stumbled upon a really great dynamic that I had loads and loads of time for. Really fun match, improbably dramatic at the stretch, like really well worked because Cassidy can balance his comedy and his actual wrestling very, very well. And this was so much better than I thought it was going to be, given the Dynamite obligatory build. I just had a smile on my face throughout. And I genuinely, as much as I really like Orange Cassidy, and I think I'm the high guy of the Dudley Boys, Orange Cassidy, but I can't remember the last time, genuinely since maybe the Pac match from Revolution 2020, where I was like falling in love with the act all over again. Like, he's made me smile a lot in like short bursts. And sometimes he does way more than that. Like the triple threat at Double or Nothing. This is the first time I really felt like I got the full Orange Cassidy experience on AEW TV. And I thought it was great.
And I should point out, because Hamlet said he'd kill us if we didn't mention it, Taz calling the scrotum the yam bag.
Yam bag. Yam bag.
Never change, Taz. Right, we go backstage. Tony Nese and his tiny niece are chatting to Tony Schiavone. Nese is talking about, you know, the fact he's been, you know, spotted at ringside and says, I've not been just sort of hanging about, basically. He's been scouting the talent. He says none of the other men who challenged Sammy Guevara of this TNT title sort of open challenge that they've got going on have got what it takes because they didn't do enough good enough scouting. But he is now confident he can beat Sammy Guevara. Sammy Guevara just so happens to be walking past at this point and he interrupts. They get into this heated exchange and Nese says, hey, calm down. Look, I just want to face you for the TNT Championship next week. Sammy accepts and they do one of my favorite things in pro wrestling, which everyone has done if you've ever been a wrestling fan with their mate. And that's the old handshake, go to walk away, pull the other person back in, except Nese, well, chins Sammy Guevara or goes after the injured ribs, I should probably point out, to lay him out. What did you make of this? Mixed emotions, I sense.
Yeah, because it was a really good version of a angle and a bit of blocking that we see to the point of genuine parody. Even AEW, Freudian slip there, and absolutely deserved one at that. That AEW, who've even started parodying themselves, of course, Sammy Guevara is there. And, you know, if you peel back that camera and you look at it, if you look at the scene, like, before the camera's lens, if that makes any sense, you can see Guevara waiting there. He just happens to be, it just becomes all the more contrived if you apply a second's worth of thought to it. I've thought of another way to resolve this creeping contrivance that is infecting AEW, right? And it kind of steps on the toes of Mark Henry's bit before the main event. But like we see it in combat sports all the goddamn time. There's, you know, combat sports, whether they are predetermined or shoot or somewhere in between, like boxing, they recognize people aren't just going to watch a fight based on the technical abilities of the respective fighters involved. It's entertainment. It's been a show for decades and decades and decades and decades. You can accept that it has to be promoted with a bit of trash talk and, you know, pretending that the athletes hate each other a bit more than they actually do in real life. But they acknowledge, right, hang on, we need to do this, but let's just have them talk trash to each other in the same shot. Why can't AEW do more of the thing that happens before Rampage, the main event? Now, I like Mark Henry's line a lot, but I like believable, immersive pro wrestling TV more than one throwaway line. They should make that the standard. If you're going to have a scene between, like this, between Guevara and Nese, just have, we have the two competitors in the upcoming TNT title match on Rampage next week, and we're going to hear from both of them right now. It wouldn't be contrived that becomes like heated and tense and punches are thrown, because we see this in MMA and in boxing all the goddamn time. So I would like them to do a little bit more of that, because it would make something like this be a good version of something tired.
It's lazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very lazy.
Yeah.
And they could just reframe the way these conflicts happen and make them a little bit more believable. But yeah, I thought Guevara's performance in particular was genuinely good here.
And Nese versus Guevara is going to be great. We'll talk a lot about that in due course, because I also want to mention, following this, FTR challenged the Lucha Bros to a 2 out of three falls match, but I'm going to talk about all that as we look ahead to all the great AEW wrestling we've got to look forward to this week when they ran it through on the show. So instead, we're going to move on.
Yeah, save some content for the preview, brother.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We are next up watching the Black Friday deal match. It was the women's champion Britt Baker versus Riho. If Riho wins, she gets a title shot, all because she was never eliminated from the, was it the Casino Battle Royal, I think it was.
Yes.
One of those over the top rope things that they do. I did like the fact that obviously Reba Rebel and Jamie Hayter accompanied Britt Baker. Jamie Hayter did not want to be there. Written all over her face, still pissed off about what happened.
Baker looked to the left and realised that she wasn't there. There were loads of tiny moments. Baker, I thought, was on fire on Friday.
Yeah, very early, Baker tries for the lockjaw, but Riho escapes to the ropes. Baker just stamps on her. And then Baker takes the referee to allow Hayter and Reba Rebel to choke Riho against the ropes, cutting corners as they often do. Riho comes back, drop kicks, pair of drop kicks, in fact, that sends Baker to the floor, and she hits a top rope crossbody on Baker and Rebel on the floor. Back in, though, Riho gets caught charging. Baker sends her head first into the middle turnbuckle, and we go to break. As we come back, Riho is fighting back. She eventually hits a head scissors, charging knee into the corner, but Baker comes back, suplex, and goes for the air raid crash. But Riho slips out and nails a dragon suplex for a nice near fall. Baker, on the second attempt, does hit the air raid crash. She gets a two count off the back of that. Riho gets a Northern Lights suplex and a double foot stomp from the top for another near fall. And then as Baker goes to that fisherman's neck breaker, Riho slips out of it, cradles her, 1-2-3. Britt Baker yet again failing to defeat Riho. Riho pinning the AEW Women's World Champion and earning herself a title shot in the process.
Absolutely. There's a million reasons why they've strapped up Britt Baker, and she has been anointed as the face of this division, all of which can be reduced to she's a star. She's an absolute superstar. Ratings draw, incredibly charismatic, great promo, all the rest of it. So we know already she's a star, hence why she's in this spot. I got a thrilling glimpse of Britt Baker as a genuine ace figure here. And I'm not saying that she's like a Misawa level wrestler or a Tanahashi level wrestler, but there's little glimpses of her character work in this match that I was incredibly impressed by. I thought it was her best TV offering of the year. Actually, no, because Thunder Rosa was on TV. A second best TV performance of the year. I thought it was really well measured in terms of they've obviously left fuel in the tank, if you like, for that rematch. There's little moments of Baker's performance that I thought were fantastic here, like her body language, the snap that she put in certain moves where she was genuinely pissed off at the fight that Riho was putting up to the point where it felt like she was defensive in these like small little moments she was really putting over of, gotta resent how much I'm getting brought to my limit here. Let's nip that one in the bud by being incredibly aggressive and dismissive of Riho. There was a great spot in the corner where Riho was like, had a face like smushed into the second turnbuckle, and Baker was just stamping across the like between the shoulder blades, like ragdolling her head. It looked like Riho's head was about to come off her spine. It was great. Little tiny moments like that when she was trying to put her away for the lockjaw, she was like rolling her eyes almost as Riho was doing that wonderful arc out of the predicament. Genuinely, I got the impression that Britt Baker was a little bit terrified of getting beat here. And sure enough, she did. She wrestled as if Riho had her number. Mm-hmm. And Riho, in fact, did have her number. I thought this was really strong character work from Britt Baker. And they're going to have the banger at a later date. Perfect setup. Perfect result, as we touched upon on the preview. What was it, May, June, July, August, September, October, November, 7 months, perfect time for it to do a job. Had some bad faith actors in my replies, and I don't get annoyed.
Come on.
I don't get annoyed. I don't get annoyed, but I think it's worth pointing out that, no, you are operating in bad faith. Oh, if WWE beat a champion, he'd be the first to do it. And I was like, yeah, because they do that as a matter of course every single week. 7 months is long enough, particularly when you're doing a long title reign, to make it not to, one, they're not going to look like they're no longer the champion if they get beat once in 7 months. Two, when you've got an idea of who the ultimate destination is at the end of the title reign, it can get a little bit boring. Mm-hmm. So you want to add one extra wrinkle, just as a little device they call on television assholes called a twist, right? So for all of those reasons and more, I was really impressed by this segment of television.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let's run through what they've advertised for this week, though. Wednesday night Dynamite, you've got Cody Rhodes versus Andrade El Idolo in the Atlanta street fight.
I knew he was working a match in Atlanta. I knew it. Got the wrong match, but I knew he was going to have one.
Really exciting match for the TBS title tournament. Quarterfinal match, I think. Ruby Soho versus Chris Statlander. Not a good week to be Alan Angels. He is facing Brian Danielson. It was either him or
Anna Jay.
Yeah, one of the Atlanta people. But yeah, that's the match that we've also got to look forward to. And the undefeated tag teams, Billy and Colton Gunn versus Sting and Darby Allin. Some huge matches before we even talk about what we've got to look forward to next week on Rampage.
Absolutely. And if you want my thoughts on them, make sure to check out the Dynamite preview wherever you get your podcasts from.
Let's quickly mention, I mentioned the TNT title match, Sammy Guevara, Tony Nese. That goes down next Friday on Rampage. 2 out of 3 falls for the AEW World Tag Titles, FTR versus Lucha Bros. We were talking about this in the office. We wouldn't have anything else on that card, would we? Two matches. You want to give them as much time as you possibly can on a 1 hour show.
Yes, I think just to delve into the preview a little bit early, just because it is on the forefront of our minds in our nerd office talking about wrestling, even if those conversations aren't getting recorded, we're still nerdy enough to talk about them. If you stack up match for match, FTR's NXT run versus AEW run, I think the NXT run's better.
Yeah, fair.
I think this match has been positioned so that FTR can really work something genuinely classic, like Young Bucks tier classic. And I really hope they can do it, because I wouldn't say it's been a failure of a run, but I'm starting to think I would have maybe have expected more. If you look at the principal, ex-WWE act, who's got all the talent in the world, goes to AEW, fulfills that talent.
Yes.
One of my favorite low-key stories, threads, if you like. Brody Lee, John Moxley, Miro, there's been loads. FTR are kind of just the same, if not a little bit worse, which is still, they've still been excellent, but I'm really looking to that one to be a blowaway classic.
Yeah, that's their wheelhouse.
I'll expect an out lesser.
2 out of 3 falls.
And I really hope they get the time to deliver it, as you say.
We got the old back and forth pre-main event interview, which was just, I mean, hard to go wrong with Eddie Kingston, Daniel Garcia, and most importantly of all, 2.0. Matt from 2.0 says he hopes Eddie didn't fill up too much on turkey, because tonight he's getting a taste of Red Death on Black Friday. And Jeff says, look, we know you. The reason why we did all that we did, chucking coffee in your face, attacking you, etc., because you reacted exactly as we thought you would. And Daniel Garcia, I love him. He's such a star of the future. Says, look, here we are, Friday night, Rampage, another sold-out arena for a Daniel Garcia main event. Tonight, he's going to embarrass the King, and he'll be giving thanks. And then Eddie Kingston just responds by laughing and says, you're serious? Garcia's going to stand there like the big, tough guy? My man, you're too light in the ass to mess with me.
Perfect line. Never heard anything like that, and it was great.
He says, I'm going to show you that tonight in the ring, and your other two homeboys, just shut up. He He says, "Talk is cheap, partner," and he throws up a sign, and then we get...
"Well, looks like we've had enough talk. It's time for the main event."
And what a main event we got as well. If you haven't already, if you're not already, follow Daniel Garcia on Twitter, because, well, we'll talk about it afterwards, but his reaction to, spoiler alert,
defeat. It's not even his job. It's my job.
It's just so good. So early on, it's more map-based, despite the animosity between these two. I suppose they're just trying to showcase that their skill set is better, not rather than necessarily just beat the crap out of each other. But then Garcia says, no bollocks to this. Here's a good idea. Let's have a slugfest with Eddie Kingston. It didn't end well for him as a result of that. Matt and Jeff, the 2.0 boys, have to pull Garcia out to the floor. So Kingston comes out and beats them up as well. But as Kingston gets back into the ring, following focusing his attention on 2.0, Garcia catches him with a kick, takes control, tries to whip him out of the corner, but Kingston comes back with those chops of his and pokes him in the eye. Love a good eye poke, me. Kingston hit a knee off the middle rope, but then started selling his knee, and Garcia got that, like, red glowing weakness spot that you see on some games when you're fighting a boss, and just targeted that after double chopping Eddie Kingston in the throat. Kingston fights back by biting Garcia, as he often does, and chucks him out of a suplex. As we go to a break, and then when we come back, Garcia is stomping away at Kingston. He's got the control of the arm as well. He tries to whip Kingston into the turnbuckle, but Kingston's leg just gives out at that point. And Garcia basically thinks he's completely in control and walks straight into an exploder suplex. Garcia goes for the knee bar. Kingston makes it to the ropes, but again, he's really struggling now. Garcia goes for a jackknife cover, but Kingston rolls out of it and power bombs him. They're still fighting the old dog yet. Kingston goes for a half and half suplex. Garcia counters wonderfully into a heel hook, and then Garcia goes for the hammer punches, but Kingston catches him with a nice half and half suplex in response. A big strike fest here. I think it was earlier on that I'm thinking of this spot, but there was a bit where Garcia thought he chinned Eddie Kingston, and Eddie Kingston hit him with like five shots in half a second, basically, to knock Garcia down. That was earlier, but later on, yeah, just a real strike fest between the two. Kingston fights back with an enziguri, and Garcia hits him with a lariat for a double down. Garcia is the first one back up, drops a knee on Kingston. Kingston comes back and just slaps the taste out of his mouth. Garcia goes for a pile driver, but Kingston reverses into a Saito suplex. Goes for the spinning back fist, but Garcia ducks it. Not the second one, though. He connects with that one. Garcia is out. Kingston gets the pinfall. And what happened afterwards, we'll talk about after we talk about this. But the match itself was just jaw-dropping.
Oh, this is so great. I want to start this little analysis by putting over Chris Jericho, because I feel like he gets a lot of pretty warranted criticisms for his commentary on Rampage. Slowly but surely, his caterwauling has sort of quieted down a little bit. I don't get that, "Oh, shut up, brother." I don't get that feeling from him that much anymore.
And he could have overcompensated considering what we're about to talk about here.
Yes, absolutely, but he didn't. He was quite muted. I think his commentary has improved. I think he's found the correct register with which to speak. And the reason why it's so affecting when you have a current active wrestler doing commentary is that they can give another dimension to the match itself. I really want to put over one call, and it was barely a call. It was like really an organic reaction from someone who should know how much this hurts, how much it would suck to take. At one point, as you mentioned, Kingston just leveled Garcia with a half and half suplex. When you have a current active wrestler on the commentary team effectively going, "Ah, right at the neck."
Along with Starks as well, because Starks was talking
about it. Yeah, absolutely.
Well.
When you have someone who would know, "Jesus Christ, I would hate to be the victim of that."
Referencing the bump clock and everything.
Yeah, it just illuminates how much that was a great spot or a hell of a risk to take. And it just further draws you into the action because they've got the credibility. And when they do that frightened, visceral reaction, it just adds such a dimension to the match itself. You didn't really need the commentary to sell how much this looked like it hurt, though, which was an additional feature to how great it was. It just felt like a fight. Like, that's what I love about AEW right now in 2020. 21 especially, like just the goddamn range. You have fireworks, you have plunder, you have really like sort of considered character work with like Hangman Page's matches. You have the technical artistry and strategy of Danielson, and you got like a Danielson tier match in this main event. Eddie Kingston selling. It's not, he wasn't merely consistent in it. He wasn't merely like believable in terms of, oh, he looks like he's really hurt. Like the minutia of his selling is just absolutely outstanding. So he gets his leg worked over in typically great Garcia style. And Eddie Kingston, who's basically this incredibly hard and defiant brawler who just happens to have watched All Japan, and that's influenced his style. It's great. Lands a powerbomb on Garcia, but because his knee has been ritually worked over throughout the match, he can't explode into a pin attempt.
Nope.
Because his knee's killing. If you watch him fall down frame by frame, you have to believe that his knee was actually hurting in this match.
Yeah.
The way he stumbles backwards, and it wasn't particularly graceful. Like, it was the opposite of a flat back bump almost. He just staggered down as if, like, oh, it's giving away, it's giving away, it's giving away, it's giving away, it's giving away. Like, he literally couldn't support it. Like, how do you work that?
Mm.
It's just tremendous selling on his part. The match itself was great. Just like really aggressive, loads of fire in it, loads of intensity, loads of great working craft, to the point where it didn't feel like they were actually crafting anything. Mm. That's the genius of this. It was like, it didn't feel like they were actually doing anything to construct something. It was constructed to make it feel like it wasn't being constructed, if that makes any sense. I thought it was absolutely fabulous. I thought the finish was great. So clever, because what you've done with that finish, with the duck of the spinning back fist, is if you haven't just done it out of nowhere, Garcia's ducked it knowing to strategize for that move. So it's made him look clever, but Eddie Kingston is the cleverer one purely because he spent more years in the ring than Garcia. There's nothing separating them in terms of how good they are, how tough they are, other than Eddie Kingston's just had a few more years around the bend than Garcia. The result would probably look different in 5 years. I loved that little allusion to that. Great main event. Totally different to the opener. Completely compelling in this. This really feels like a fight sort of way. And I could watch this kind of match on Saturday morning with my first brew for the remainder of my lifetime.
Yes. And we're going to talk about the fallout of the match in a second. But some of the other fallout that I really appreciated, I mentioned it before, Daniel Garcia, at Garcia Wrestling, if you want to go and follow him on Twitter. I love the real analysis that he puts into his defeats. He doesn't just go, John Cena, well, I lost, but on to the next one. Doesn't matter, really. He tweeted, my mistake going into this match. He shared the clip of him, the strike exchange with Eddie Bloody Kingston. My mistake going into this match was underestimating the size and power of King. Got a few takedowns stuffed, so I hesitated and dropped early to strikes that I never fully recovered from. Oh, got dropped early, sorry, from strikes that I never fully recovered from. I resorted to my default, brackets, subs, which was a mistake due to his durability and toughness. I love the effort that's gone into all that.
Yeah, Garcia absolutely rules. He absolutely rules. He compliments the story of his matches after the fact, as well as making sure that they feel real or feel meaningful to him. He knows what he's doing as well. His job right now in AEW is as a prodigy who hasn't yet refined himself to make sure everyone's in trouble. He's getting over by getting like beat.
It's weird, isn't
it? He's just class. He's absolutely class. More opportunities for him, I'm sure, are forthcoming. He's like, how many future TNT champions has this goddamn company got? It's absolutely incredible.
Those pillars better watch out, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Eddie Kingston gets his revenge on Daniel Garcia, but he doesn't have time to celebrate that before he's jumped by the real stars of the show, 2.0, who come in, attack him, and then Chris Jericho removes his headset, runs down, and saves Eddie Kingston to close the show. Your thoughts on that? Because we sort of alluded to it on the preview.
I alluded to it on the preview. Like, I'm not being funny, but the second that they shot simultaneous angles with 2.0, one with Kingston, one with Jericho, I thought he's done a Jericho here. And that is Kingston's star, but you know, I'll get him to the next level. Look, they've got a decent rapport. Their Kingston's appearance on Talk with Jericho was class. You can tell that they've instantly bonded. Maybe Kingston's delighted to work with Chris Jericho. Everything Kingston touches turns to gold. I have faith in whatever this is going to be, whether it's going to be a tag team or a... I don't need you to fight my battles. Like, piss off, we'll have a fight, me and you instead. I've got all the faith in the world that this should genuinely be class. Like, really, I think it'll be awesome. But at the same time, I still believe the motivations behind Chris Jericho pitching to work with Eddie Kingston.
Yes.
Largely cynical, but I do think the result will be outstanding.
Intriguing, yes, to see how this one plays out. Because like you say, you can see it either going one of two ways.
Yeah, I mean, if you just work with Jericho,
an unorthodox
be a star.
Tag team, which would be fascinating. Or also Eddie Kingston going around going, no, I've got a best mate who I tag with. And yeah, I don't need any more fight. Eddie Kingston is very much someone who I would associate with the phrase, I've got enough friends, thanks.
There's storyline potential here for it to sprawl out and to do stuff with Kingston, Santana and Ortiz again. That would be cool.
Ooh.
That would be cool.
Kingston in a shoot fight with Jake Hager, beating crap out of him, probably.
Yeah, possibly, yeah. Absolutely. Look, I honestly think this will be great, whatever they do together.
But that's more on Eddie Kingston than it is on Chris Jericho, right?
Yeah, like Eddie Kingston. Chris Jericho's Chris Jericho. Like, I think he's increasingly easy to take the piss out of. He always has these cycles where you fall in love with Chris Jericho.
Yes, yeah.
And then, I mean, it's just part of the curse of longevity. And, like, it's kind of harsh when you think about it. He should be, for how much entertainment he's given everyone over the years, you should just be like, Chris Jericho can do no wrong.
Yeah.
If he has a bad week, if he has some bad pattern this week, it's Chris Jericho. We should be nicer to him. It's the curse of wrestling being weekly and never-ending. Mm-hmm. You just resent people. You just start to resent them. So I've got no doubt in my rational mind that this will be great, but he's a cynical bastard for pitching this one.
Good luck on the Fozzy Tour. Looking forward to more of that, basically. Just go away. Make me miss you for a bit. But let us know your thoughts on everything that went down on AEW Rampage on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
MSidgwick.
You can order his brilliant new book, All About the Rise of AEW, Becoming All Elite. You can either order it as part of the Sidgwick Bundle.
It sold out, brother.
Oh, they sold out. We can order...
Just get a signed version.
Get a signed version and, I don't know, 606 wrestling matches to see before you die, which Sid was also involved in at whatculture.bigcartel.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Adam Will 1. I think I already said that. Doesn't matter. I'll say it again. You can follow him at MSidgwick, at WhatCultureWWE for all of us. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. The SmackDown review is available right now, and the Raw preview will be coming later on today. But this has been the AEW Rampage review. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.